Welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their games and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, your friendly local indie enthusiast and your host today for the very final time. Yes, today is the last time you'll hear my voice on Yes Indeed Pod as my time on the podcast has come to an end. I'm handing the reins over to Thomas Manuel, who today interviews me to give you a little bit of background and a peek behind the curtain here at Yes Indeed Pod HQ. It was a bittersweet interview to record and to edit, so I'm thrilled to finally share it with you. And now that's out of my head and into yours, for the last time, let's talk indie. So, today, we're talking to me. Thomas Manuel is going to interview me today. We're just going to see how it goes.
Yeah, this is the very special kind of last episode in this saga of Yes Indeed, right? This is Mark's last episode as host, even though for this one, I'll be asking them some questions so that we can finally hear, you know, the silent interviewer. We can get some insight.
Silent? You've heard Yes Indeed Pod before, I see.
You know, Max can finally get the, you know, can see how it feels to be on the other side and get some questions thrown at them, and then we'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll get some insight into, you know, their podcasting process, but also some other stuff. So Max, normally these episodes start with an introduction, but I guess listeners don't need one.
I hope not.
Max, why did you start the Yes Indeed podcast? I listened to an interview that you did with Jeremy on the Draw Your Dice podcast.
Oh, sure.
And you talked about how you started it because you wanted this space for, you know, a relaxed conversation with indie game designers.
Yeah, that's
right. It's been 3 years of doing this. If you look at the feed, there's like 100 plus episodes. I think almost, you know, 117 or something like that. So looking back, are you happy with it?
Yes. I think on the whole, and the things that make me happy are when people tell me that it's an interesting podcast and they like listening to it. The things that make me happy are when people say, I listened to your podcast and then I went away and bought somebody's game. That makes me really happy because that's what I wanted to be here for. And the other things that make me happy are when people say, your podcast is interesting, but your voice is really nice, which is sort of a fabulous thing to hear. I think on the whole, it's been pretty successful. I think we've gotten the word out about a lot of very small designers who are just starting out, who are just trying to make little games that speak to them and speak to other people about very unique experiences. I think we've also had a great time talking to bigger designers like Paul Sager and Vincent D. Baker. And just in general, I've just had a blast. I've met loads of really nice people. I've had a lot of fun. And in general, it's been a pretty enjoyable way to spend the... I don't even want to estimate how much time I've spent on the podcast in the last 3 years. But
are there any highlights that stand out in these 3 years?
You know, I think one of the things that I enjoyed doing the most was the thing that I did the least of, which was the chain reaction interviews I did for Zine Quest this year. Or Zine Month, rather, it wasn't Zine Quest, where I just set off a series of interviews and people just set up interviews with each other and then sent me the audio. That was really nice. It was really reassuring to see that everything came through and I edited it all and it all went out when it was supposed to. And that all felt like it was a good moment. You know, I was ahead of the game. I was on top of things then. That was good. I think that was my biggest highlight, like the success of that and what that did for people's game campaigns and what that did for people's Zine Month campaigns and what that did for people's confidence, I think, as interviewers and low-key journalists in the indie TTRPG scene, which is, I think, what it needs.
You know, that was a really cool format and was a really sort of like interesting event that you instituted. Where did that idea come from? Like what was the seed of that?
It's really cheeky. I stole it from a radio program where comedians were interviewing each other and they picked the guest for next week and then they interviewed them. I just completely nicked it. And the program was called Chain Reaction, which is...
okay, yeah.
Not only did I steal the format, but I even stole the names. But, you know, I feel like it was in the spirit of it, maybe.
It was particularly cool because I think Yes Indeed has had this focus of Zine Quest specific, like you always try to do something extra, something kind of,
yeah,
you know, you go all out for Zine Quest, trying to promote zines from like indie creators. Like, why do you put in that much energy and why is it so important to you that like the Zine Quests are like well represented like on Yes Indeed?
I think the truthful reason is that I started Yes Indeed Pod in January 2020 and like Zine Month 3 was the month after, and like just by chance two of the people I wanted to interview were doing Zine Month, so I was like, well, okay, I'll interview an extra two people and it'll be a nice like sort of introduction to the show that will get me quite a bit of attention, which it sort of worked. Then the next year I was like, well, that was a lot of fun, how about I just do as many interviews as possible but make them a bit shorter? And that was great and I really enjoyed doing it up until about the 20th of February, and then I was like, I just don't want to do this anymore. It's way too much effort. So the year after, I decided instead of like really hitting my scheduling time, I would just hand the reins over to somebody else. But for me, the energy of Zine Quest is kind of intrinsically tied to the energy of the indie scene itself. It's all about people just getting up and doing stuff by themselves or collaborating with others to make something cool and unique. And because they're zines, they're often like really quirky and weird, and like they don't necessarily follow what traditional RPGs look like, and that's awesome. And that's what I love about Zine Quest, and it's what I love about the indie scene, and like the two tied together just kind of fell into place, I think, for what I wanted in Yes Indeed Pod to be. That's what my quest, I think, was.
I'm looking at your feed and I think in 2021 you did 23 Zine Quest interviews like in 1 month. February has 28 days.
Yeah, there were two episodes out some of those days as well. Like people said, oh, can I have it out on this day? And I was like, yeah, why not? And I massively overpromised. And so I took back a little bit of control the year after, but it was still quite chaotic.
It was an innovation, you know, that, you know, came from sustainability and, you know, you working with your limitations, but it's cool now. And I think more people should take the format and do things with it because, you know, like you said, Zine Quest has this kind of collaborative, I mean, not Zine Quest, Zine Quest is the branded trademark Kickstarter, you know, enclosed space. But yeah, Zine Month, you know, it has that kind of collaborative like energy, and this is a super collaborative format. Yeah,
it's really good. I mean, the format that I'd love to see the most would be people playing games like Party of One Do, but in series. I think that would be so much fun for people to do. But I think Jeff Storm has cornered the market on it a bit, really. So.
but Chain Reaction as duet games is very
Chain
cool.
Reaction as duet games. Yes, I would like that. And I absolutely promise that I will not be starting a podcast to do that because it's too much.
You know, but if someone started it, you could guest on it because then you'd only have to do two episodes.
Yeah, okay, as long as I don't have to edit them as well. Yeah. That's fine.
is editing the most complicated part of the process? Because I know there's scheduling, first of all, finding the guests, which we should talk about. But is editing the thing you dread the most?
I suppose I should talk about the whole process, which I did sort of mention on Twitter a while ago, and it does get to be a lot of time invested in an episode. So I don't know, for the purposes of transparency, I'll kind of break it down. And then if you decide that sounds like too much work, then you can just run off. When it's, you know, I spend time finding guests. Sometimes people come to me with things they want to do. Sometimes I go out looking for people, and all in all, you know, it takes a little bit of time, maybe like an hour to organize when it's going to be. And then the interview itself takes about an hour and a quarter in total. And then there's a little bit of post where either we have a chat while I'm downloading files, things like that. As a Brit, typically that's not been the easiest to schedule for certain parts of the world. So, for example, I know like it's evening for me, but it's really, really late night / early morning for you. Australia has been a difficult one for me to get in touch with. I had quite a lot of Australian guests in the first couple of years. West Coast America, basically our schedules do not align in the slightest. So that's not been the easiest. And I have quite a constrained schedule with work and family, so that's not been the easiest. Editing itself I found it takes about 3 times longer to edit than it does to record in general. If the final episode is 40 minutes, that's taken me between 2 and 2.5 hours to edit. So that's quite intense. And then there's things like uploading and promoting, which take 30 minutes to 1 hour each. So all in all, there's quite a lot of work to get one episode out. It comes out to about 20 to 30 hours a month of my free time, which seems like a lot. So
again, looking at the feed in 2021, you ended up releasing 48 episodes, which is almost one a week, which is an amazing achievement.
Okay, that must have been why I was really tired last year. Yeah, a lot of that, I mean, more than half of that, I think, was
the inquest. Yeah.
And those were a lot shorter, so they didn't take as long. Yeah. They were only 10 to 15 minute interviews, so they were a lot easier to do in general. But like, we do have some really long interviews in there as well. Like, there are some that are over an hour as episode time, which means they were generally 1.25 to 1.5 hours recording. Like, the recorded audio is the audio that's the edited bit. You listen to every tiny bit of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes multiple times. To get through 1 minute of audio typically takes something like 20 clicks and button presses to get to delete the bits that I want to delete. So yeah, it is time consuming.
Now that you've laid it out, do you have any advice for me going forward? Things that you've learned, tips and tricks you've picked up over the 3 years that you've been doing this?
Don't do it on a laptop. Editing at a proper desk with a mouse and proper keyboard is about twice as quick as doing it on a trackpad on a laptop. That's a really bad bit of advice.
No, it's good advice.
In general, I think I do it in a very manual way, and people have said to me, why do you do it like that? But I think it deserves the attention. But if you were less of a perfectionist than I am, which I'm not, and actually not really that much of a perfectionist, but if you like maybe cared less about the audio quality than I do, then like genuinely, I think there are lots of automation shortcuts for reducing the time spent doing it. I've just never wanted to, apparently.
I asked you about highlights and you kind of mentioned the chain reaction zine month sequence from this year. Are there any specific interviews that you want, that you kind of remember fondly for some reason or the other?
That's such a hard question. I mean, it was really amazing to talk to Paul Sager, because Paul's books and games were kind of the reason I got into indie role-playing games to begin with. So to speak to Paul about that and about the games that he'd made as Half Me Impress was like beyond cool. I was a little bit starstruck with that interview, shall we say. So that was cool. And then I did get to speak to Vincent Baker, and that was a really fun interview as well, listening to stuff about Under Hollow Hills that I think has flown under the radar about that game. Yeah. And that I was really stoked to learn. So that was really cool as well. Other people I've spoken to, like Michael Lowe, I spoke to recently about role-playing games in educational settings. It was really inspiring to listen to an educator speak about role-playing games being a fantastically useful tool for kids and educators. I loved speaking to Luke of Wildwoods Games about their really, really interesting and weird folklore-inspired role-playing games. Just so many people who I've spoken to over the last 3 years who I've just thought, you know, you're a cool person. Thanks for taking the time to speak to this weird podcaster, you know. I appreciate it. There's just a lot of that, really. Like, speaking to Jeff Stormer was really cool. I enjoyed that. Speaking to Federico Sones twice about Nibiru and about Zephyr, that was really cool, because Fede was the first guest we had, and I'd known them a little bit before I started the podcast. And like, after that, it felt like we'd kind of connected on a on a level. And like, their games are really interesting and really inspiring. They're sort of about anarchism and about what it means to be a society and like what threats there are to society and things like that. And that was just like a series of very fascinating interviews that touched on a lot of different very interesting sociological, anthropological points. And that's something that I think is really important that is kind of missing from traditional games, is that connection to something greater than just play. So I seem to have talked about those two interviews more than any others, so I guess maybe those two are the highlights.
No, it's interesting that you bring up the two interviews with Federico, because I think one of the like interesting things about Yes Indeed is that you've actively gone and sought out creators that weren't in the US or UK, creators from Latin America, creators from Southeast Asia. You have these almost like mini series where you kind of line up a group of creators from these places and talk about
them. Yeah. I had so much fun doing those.
Like, how did that come about? What was your kind of goal with that stuff?
So the two series I did were Yes in RPG Seed, which was a terrible name. And then I spun off on that into Yes in Latamed, which was even worse.
Yeah.
You know, I just shouldn't have done that. So, and that was speaking to people from Southeast Asia and people from Latin America. And those scenes, I think, are really interesting and really vibrant. And the Southeast Asia scene had kind of, it hadn't taken off, but it had become a lot more visible in the couple of years just before Yes Indeed Pod had been like looking for guests. The SEA scene sort of exploded into American and UK attention during the Sad Mech Jam, which I can't picture when that was, but you know, that was a lot of people's RPG SEA origin story. And loads of people had made games for that from Southeast Asia, particularly the Philippines. And their names were just coming up a lot. Sin Posada and Ray and the Dovetailer. All of these people I just thought had very interesting things to say about their games. And their games talked about really interesting things that I was interested in talking about, like language and the intersection of language and culture, and about non-Western folklore that you had no idea about, but also about weird things like the intersection of non-Western folklore with Catholicism and Catholic imagery. Just amazing things that are outside of my experience and outside of the experience of most North Americans, I think. And it was just very cool to talk to them. I had such fascinating chats with like Maria Misson. And then this year I was like, well, let's do that again for RPG Latam, because that was another really interesting scene that I wanted to talk to people about. And I just got exactly the same thing again. It was like talking about language and culture and about how games are different in different languages. That was a very interesting revelation to me. And about how you can try to take the colonialism out of games, but still look at things through a colonialist lens. And that was really interesting as well. Yeah, just a bunch of very fascinating things that came out of me just wanting to highlight what these scenes were doing and how they felt, I guess, was what I wanted to capture.
There's a kind of well-kept secret, and I mean that completely tongue-in-cheek, in the sense it's not secret at all. Podcasters get a lot out of interviews themselves, right? Like, this is, you know, you put it out there and it feels like, you know, like content that other people can consume, but clearly like you enjoy the process and you're getting a lot out of it.
Oh, for absolute sure. I'm getting so much out of it, like learning what other people think about games, how they feel about games, how they feel when they make games. I think that really informs what my game design looks like. But just like making connections with people in the scene and like feeling like you're doing something to contribute, that's a really nice feeling. Like I said earlier, when people come and say, oh, I bought this game because I heard it on Yes Indeed Pod, like, thank you. Tell me that more, because that's so cool. That's amazing to hear. Like, not only have I enriched your life by giving you a new game to play, but I've also literally enriched somebody else's life by giving them cash, you know? That's great. That's what I'm here for, I suppose.
Yeah, I remember before you started Yes Indeed Pod, you were organizing these cooperative bundles of games.
Oh, damn. That was so long ago.
Yeah. I remember when I first joined Twitter, or when I first kind of started getting in the scene, that was the version of you that I saw. And so I sort of joined Twitter just as you were starting like Yes Indeed and things. You know, now that I've been kind of had the privilege to kind of like watch from afar all the different things you do, there are some patterns here looking at the kind of projects you take on. And you know, one of them is like this commitment, like you said, to the smaller, weirder, more independent side of the hobby. And then this constant kind of experimenting with alternate forms of publishing. You know, I'm thinking about both the Far Horizons co-op and the indie zine. And three, just like building up other people, especially sort of like new designers or, you know, designers from marginalized backgrounds.
Yeah.
And we know that, you know, even if you step back from Yes Indeed, there are all these other things you're going to do. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the indie scene? Is that going to continue? Far Horizons Co-op, how are you involved in that? What plans do you have for that?
I mean, to just go back a little bit, I think it's really easy for me to kind of go and promote other people and big them up. And a part of that, I think, is a little bit of, I don't feel like my creativity has a lot to contribute. And like, I don't mean that in the sense that I don't think that I make good stuff. I just mean it that I think other people make better stuff. So that is why I want to go out there and shout about stuff, because I have, I guess privilege is the word, which is that I have a good job that I can rely on in the daytime. I have, like, I'm a white person, I'm a middle class person, I am a male presenting person. Like, I've got all this privilege. I may as well use it for something useful, you know? So yeah, sure, I'm just going to shout about people's weird games. Why not? In terms of projects that I have that may or may not go forward, like, the indie scene hasn't really done anything for 6 months now, and we've talked about on the indie scene server about probably we're just not actually going to continue. We may do one final issue. If it carries on in the future, it's not going to be me running it, because as with the S Indeed pod, it was an enormous amount of effort, and it's not that I didn't get anything back from it, but I felt like it was probably sustainable enough to stand up on its own legs now, except, like, nobody does anything with it, so maybe that's not true. Far Horizons Co-op has absolutely loads of members who are really, really willing to push it in new and interesting directions, and we're doing stuff with that all the time. So, like, at the moment, we're bringing out a new series of short games that are going to be released in zine format every month, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that. We've got one coming out called O Morning Star, which is about rebelling against heaven and what that would feel like for Satan, and that's coming out on December 16th, and I'm really excited about that because I've had basically no input in that apart from to tell people what to do, and that's fantastic. That's a really good feeling, is when you can just, like, wind people up and poke them in the right direction. And that sounds really patronizing, but, like, genuinely, I think it's amazing when people can just take an idea and run with it and not have direction from on high, which is what that co-op is all about, really. So yeah, I'm not going to step away from the indie scene at all. I'm going to still be there. I'm going to still be community manager for Far Horizons. I'm going to still make games. I'm probably going to publish them myself, collaborate with people on stuff. I'm hoping people will still have me on podcasts to interview and play games with. Who knows? Yeah, I'll probably do some other stuff. I mean, it's very difficult to keep me quiet, I think. it's the general vibe here, yeah.
Do you have some insight into the indie zine? Because it felt like an experiment. It felt like something cool that you were trying to do, and it was super collaborative. It had all the, like I said, it had all the kind of features of a Marx project. Is it a question of just that it didn't sell enough to kind of justify all that time? Or is there a more kind of nuanced diagnosis to this?
We did an experiment, and it's not that it didn't work. That idea of running something anarchic and collaborative and producing something that is a bit off the wall and a bit zany is really good, and I really enjoy it, and it works for a lot of publications. I'm thinking, like, Nevermind the Die Rolls, Made to Way Quarterly is another good one, Knucklebone Magazine, and they all, like, do similar things. Like, they have games, they have articles, they have discussion pieces, editorials, all that, and they're all produced to really high quality, and I love them all dearly. The thing about indie zine was that I found it hard to know how to market it, and because I was doing a lot of that labor and the other people weren't doing the creative side of the marketing, it was difficult for me to sell it. Eventually, we just sort of realized that it wasn't quite working as an investment of time for people. So we were, like, making a little bit of money. We did, over the lifetime of it, make enough money to do a print run and do all sorts of really interesting things. And I've still got loads of those zines sitting on my floor. But I think ultimately selling collections and anthologies of things is quite a hard sell, which is one of the reasons that Far Horizons Co-op has moved away from doing a short games digest as well, because it's hard to shout about how cool a thing is if it's mixed in with 10 other really, really cool things that you want to also shout about. Yeah, I think on the whole, if I were going to continue that collaboration, I'd want people to put out smaller stuff more frequently and charge not very much money for it. But that would be a massive pain to administer. So
yeah.
All in all, I think collaboration is really, really good, but it needs time invested as oversight, and it's that time component that I feel like I don't particularly have in abundance at the moment.
You do also kind of, as a designer, release games that are much more, they are collaborations in the sense you tend to have, like, other people contributing, maybe as editors or as artists and things like that, but they are solo projects in the way that we tend to call things solo projects. Do you think that you're going to be doing more of that? Is that where your interest is? I know you're working on one right now. Do you want to tell us about that?
I'll answer the first part of your question and then maybe I'll tell you about Ghostbox. The first part of your question, am I going to be making more games? I think I'm going to be making games at the same rate. Because if I said I was going to be making more games now that I have more time, I think my partner would probably kill me. So, because that wasn't the point of me stepping back from the podcast. I will continue to make two or three really weird, quite experimental, basically very odd games every year. Maybe as collaborations, most likely as stuff that's itch funded that I can be bothered to promote. Because Kickstarter is too stressful for me. Expect to see more weird stuff like Ghostbox, which is a solo epistolary game about abandoned letterboxes, dead letters, and hopeful senders, which is one of the weirdest games I've ever made, but was sparked by a conversation I had with James Chip about a postbox that they see in the middle of a wood, miles from any settlements, and questioning, you know, who uses this postbox? Because somebody must be, because otherwise they block them up. And that sort of turned me into thinking, well, what if they had actually abandoned that postbox and people were just putting letters inside and they were never getting collected? And then I was reading about abandoned postboxes, because that's the kind of thing we do as game designers, right? We just do weird Google searches and wonder what the FBI think of us. And then I heard about this postbox in Manchester train station. And there was this postbox that the Royal Mail had blocked up because there was another postbox just outside. And it was annoying to come into the train station and go onto the platform to collect letters from it. And then somehow, like, the piece of wood that they'd blocked it up with had fallen off. Then loads of people carried on posting their letters in there. And the Royal Mail didn't realize this for something like 30 years. And then eventually it was so full that the letters were falling out the top. And they came and emptied this. And there was post from, you know, 30 years ago that they did deliver and obviously was like mostly obviously useless or expired or to people who are now dead. And it's like, that's so cool. Like, what an amazing idea. Just a collection of letters that somebody has sent with the hope that they will be received and yet have never been received. And like, okay, it's a train station. They're most likely to be birthday cards and things like that. But what if this was a letterbox in the middle of a community and there were people using it to send series of letters that they expected people to be getting? Like, so in Ghostbox, those are the letters that you write. So letters to your lover. Like, you're wondering why you're not getting a response. Like, getting increasingly worried by that. Or letters from a spy to their handler about the mission that they've been sent on. Or letters to your long-lost friend who you haven't spoken to for years. And then, like, I did also write a suit of cards just about, like, other weird stuff that you send in the post, like birthday cards or moving in cards, things like that. And all of those things felt like they were really real and would make for a fun and compelling game. And people have been really well receiving of this. Like, they've said, wow, this is a cool game. You can do some really cool world building with this. You can do some really cool catharsis with this, or just like talking about weird issues and getting emotionally involved in characters who you then suddenly, for no reason, just completely stop hearing anything about because the game is suddenly over. I think that's really cool. I think it's a fun game that I've talked about a lot on Twitter and I've been really excited about.
Is the game finished? Can people play it right now?
Yeah. Actually, as of Wednesday, it was text complete. So it was on itch funding and you could just buy the Ashcan edition. And then there was a sort of promissory note from me saying that, you know, when it's done, you'll have the full version. You know, I'll just upload a new file and you can download it whenever you want. So, but the game is now text complete and I'm waiting for layout and illustration from two of my really, really good friends. So I'm super stoked that hopefully, fingers crossed, by, I'm gonna say February, but it may be a bit later, there will be a full version of Ghostbox in people's inboxes. And if it does really well, I will also get it printed as a bundle of letters rather than a zine that I will put in an envelope and send to you in the post. There is almost nothing in game design that I'm more excited about than stuffing envelopes with these letters. So.
That's really cool. I know that you also, as part of the itch funding, said that you're going to send postcards to people.
Oh, I sent loads of postcards to people. I've had so much fun doing that. Apparently, there's this massive trade in vintage used postcards. So I just went on eBay and I bought like a job lot of used postcards. Some of them are already written, so I just left those and just stuck an address on and sent them to people. There was one in there from 1978, I think.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive. This is older than my eldest sibling. So that's pretty cool. And then the rest of them were blank. So I wrote the address on, and Ghostbox is based on like card prompts. So I got an old vintage set of cards, wrote the prompts on the cards and stuck that to that side as well. This is like massive spoilers for people who I've told are getting something weird in the post. But you know, they can't all be listeners, right?
I mean, the podcast will probably come out by the time they receive, if you're already sending them.
Yeah. I've sent most of them already. Yeah. So that's been really good. And people have had such a great reception of that and have been really generous with their money and with talking about, you know, bigging up the game and promoting it and stuff. It's kind of come at as an awkward time, because actually when I talk about itch funding, what I really mean is I promote it a hell of a lot on Twitter and direct people to my itch page. So really, I think it should be called Twitter funding. And that's not gone so well in the last 3 weeks. So it's tailed off a bit, but also I've lost a bit of momentum with it. So hopefully I'll pick that up before, oh yeah, there's a jam as well, before the end of the month.
Does that mean that you're getting off Twitter? Are you going somewhere else specifically?
I've spoken to the last 3 guests on the podcast about this. The answer is probably, unless Twitter becomes just nothing but Pepe memes and far-right apologists, I will be sticking around until my audience is no longer there, at which point I will have to find out where my audience has gone. And at the moment, I'm sort of on Mastodon. I had a look at co-host, didn't really get on with it. I had a look at Hive and sort of thought it's got no desktop app, and also it's indistinguishable from a CIA psyop. I started going on Reddit every day, did not really enjoy that, and then I just basically decided that Facebook was not going to be a place that I could hang out. So I'm stuck with Twitter until I can find an alternative. A lot of people who know me know that I'm really active on Discord, and I just like shoot the breeze on there and chat a lot of shit in a lot of servers. So I'll definitely be on Discord. I'll definitely be on Twitter. You may be able to find me on Mastodon, but I don't even check that every day at the moment. So don't be too hopeful. You could send me a letter. I mean, just make sure you choose a postbox that's not abandoned.
That was a lovely note to end that little section about the death of Twitter. Maybe Twitter turns into an abandoned postbox or something.
Oh yeah, maybe. Oh, that sounds like a Ghostbox hack right there. You know, in many respects, Twitter has always felt a bit like an abandoned postbox, because you don't know if anyone is ever reading your stuff until you get some interaction.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. You know, this episode, if it comes out the end of the year, as we've planned, people are going to kind of be listening to it at the society level, like a moment of change, right? The old year ends, the new year begins. So, Max, do you have any last, you know, messages you want to give people at this moment in time? What's the last thing you want to leave people with as we, you know, call this episode to a close?
What's the last thing that I want to leave people with? All in all, like, the last and serious message is that I have loved doing Yes Indeed Pod, and I have loved interacting with all of you. Even if it's a one-way interaction and I don't get anything back from you, I absolutely love seeing those download numbers go brrr. That's really nice. It's very satisfying. I've massively enjoyed it, and I will miss doing this, and I will miss this one-way interaction, and I will miss talking to interviewers and like bigging them up and stuff. But I really just want to say, please, please, please carry on supporting A, the podcast, but B, the indie scene, because it's a really cool thing. We're in a really cool indie moment. There's loads of amazing stuff going on. There's loads of really cool systems out there. There's loads of really cool people out there doing really interesting things. And I just want you to carry on listening to Thomas talking to cool game designers about cool game designs. That's basically it. I just want to say that indie does need you. You know, that's what indie needs. Indie needs people like you, like Thomas, like the listener, like the creators, to just carry on bigging up the scene and making cool stuff and buying cool stuff. Thanks for listening to me warble and witter on and on. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Listeners, I don't need to say that I've gushed enough on air over the last 2 episodes, and you don't need to hear me say any more. I just want to say thank you so much for everything you've done for this podcast. Listening to each and every episode, rating the podcast or adding your own reviews, talking to me on Twitter or Discord, sending me donations, signing up as a patron, coming on as a guest, or even running interviews earlier this year. It's only been through your help that I've wanted to and been able to continue. So once again, and from the very bottom of my heart, thank you so much. Your support truly means the world to me. And please continue to support Thomas's show in just the same way, as I know I will. In particular, I'd like to thank all of my incredible Patreon supporters: Samantha Lee, Sam Armstrong, Carl Rigney, Thomas Elliott, Craig Duffy, Donna McCarthy, Hassan Yongdi, Beyond Cataclysm, Peter Ike, Jack Blair, and Tentacle Duck. Thank you all so, so much. Your patronage has meant the world to me since we first started asking for donations. And you, yes you, can get a regular shout out and joyful thanks too if you go to patreon.com/yesindeedpod and sign up today. Most of the money will go directly to creators rather than to us, so you'll be investing directly in the indie scene, helping to make it a healthy and inclusive place for years to come. And if you can't commit regularly, you can always help out by rating and reviewing the show wherever you find your podcasts, or by donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at yesindeedpod. That's YESINDIEDPOD. We'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. Intro and interstitial music is taken from Be Quiet by Yatsar from the Free Music Archive, released under Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 International License. And the outro music is my original theme song BitQuest by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com and filmmusic.io. Thanks, Yatsar and Kevin. And until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.